We are in the Bell Center, home of the 2022 NHL Draft. And Sean, we are, dare I say, we are in the hub of hockey now.
The hub of hockey.
The hub of hockey.
It's not Hockey Town.
It's not Hockey Town. It isn't the hub of hockey Boston, or am I wrong on that?
I don't know, but it could be.
We're in the center of the hockey universe. How about that?
Yes, in the Bell Center. Bell. To use the French version. I've been told not to use French.
Don't use the French version.
I've been told not to use French while I'm here at all. I've tried a couple of times. The cab driver on the way in said, you should probably stop right now. When I said
poutine is a French word. You can use that one.
Rene Levesque. Speaking of which, you got in a day later than us, Dan, and you missed the big day out yesterday. Little field trip. Went to Dunn's, smoked meat sandwiches, and poutine.
Yeah.
It's not poutine.
All right, I
missed it. That's American. It's poutine.
But as I said, we're now in the center of the hockey universe. The draft is here. We're not talking about what I missed any longer. We have Mike Morial, one of our draft experts, co-host with Adam Kimmelman of NHL Draft Class, the podcast. He'll be joining us shortly to talk all about the draft and the top picks, the intrigue at the top. But Sean, I mean, you have 32 teams here, right? I mean, this is the first in-person draft since 2019. 32 teams are here, all optimistic again, right? The season is over. The next season is about to start. They're all optimistic. And even David Poile was talking today at the right after the general managers meetings, and he was saying that, you know, it's so much better to be in person, especially as a general manager. You can just walk up to another GM at a table and go, I'd like to trade you A for B. What do you think? And you have this conversation that is just so much different than when you're doing it remotely. And we're in person. I think there's just a level of excitement here. Plus, with Montreal being the host, great hockey town, and having the number one pick in the draft, you know, it's a great way, I think. No matter how you look at it, is it the end of this season or is it the start of next season? It's just an exciting way to end it or kick it off.
And Montreal is going to try and be aggressive. Forget the number one pick. They may try and make some trades. They want to make some noise here. They would love to start the draft by getting Gary Bettman onto the stage to say, we have a trade to announce. We spent some time with the GMs today. They had a meeting in person, and they haven't done that very often through COVID. And there's varying questions or varying opinions of the in-person draft, right? Lou Lamoriello called it a distraction. He said he would rather sit at his desk and call people and not be distracted by people like us, the reporters. Jim Neal from the Dallas Stars is like, it's great. It's great to be in person, right? You get to play poker now. Mm-hmm. You get to sit and you get to read a guy's face. You can text all you want. Hey, I want to do this and I want to do that. An impersonal text comes back. But now you see guys' eyes light up when you mention a certain player, and you know you have them, and you can work your deal from there. You know, and Kenny Holland said the meeting started at 1 o'clock. He was in the ballroom by 11:30. He was ready to talk. He said he talked to 7 or 8 general managers. He's got a couple of players he wants to move, and he said he thinks he's done all his due diligence to see if it's going to happen. So I think the GMs are excited to be back amongst their brethren. I think they were even happy to see us for about 5 minutes, and then it ended.
I don't know if they were happy to see us, but they were happy to be amongst each other. There's no question. And I love that point from Kenny Holland, because that's what we envision, right? That's what you think of, like when you're here at the Bell Center and it's draft night, and you just, okay, who's talking to who? That's what we're looking for, right? I mean, now we get to see it. When you're doing it remotely, like they are, they're maybe sitting in a conference room. I'm sitting at home watching it and covering it that way. So are you. You don't see who's talking to who. You don't see Lou Lamoriello get up from his table and walk over to Kyle Dubas, and what are they talking about, right? And then the Twitter machine blows up and goes, oh, Lou Lamoriello and Kyle Dubas are talking to each other. Like, that's the level of excitement, you know, that I get out of the draft, just hanging around and just watching it. Just watching what's happening and waiting for something to happen. Then when something breaks, chasing that down. And I do think, Sean, I think we're going to see player movement at Thursday night and Friday, if not before. I think we're going to see it. Hey, by the time you listen to this podcast, there might be player movement. I think it's going to happen some because of it's in person, more so because, again, you're talking about a flat cap going up $1 million, and teams have to move players. They want to be able to sign guys that they can't afford to sign right now, and they have to move players to do it. We've already seen the Tampa Bay Lightning do that, right? I mean, I would have never guessed that Ryan McDonagh would be traded by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Well, he was traded on Sunday because they prioritized other players and cap space too. They prioritized Nick Paul over Ryan McDonagh, and they needed more cap space to have some more flexibility. And Ryan McDonagh gets moved to Nashville. The Predators are thrilled to have him. They basically got him for not much at all. And I think we could see more of that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's going to be a wild weekend or week. It's not on the weekend this time, yeah. But it's going to be a wild end of the week here, and that's great. But some of the reasons why you think there are going to be trades could be the reason why there's not trades. There is a flat cap,
yeah,
and teams are having trouble moving against it, right? Teams that want to make hockey trades can't make hockey trades because they can't find the money to make them. You know, again, Jim Neal was talking about all of a sudden, instead of being like, I want to trade you this guy for that guy, they got to go find a third guy to broker part of it and maybe a fourth guy to broker another part of it. He goes in, at some point, the tentacles are so far reaching that you just throw in the towel and say, I can't do this anymore. So, you know, I think we'll see what happens. And the other part of it is there's so many teams that think they're close, right? When you think about it, again, the Dallas Stars were one Ottinger save away from putting Calgary away, right? Calgary was close to putting Edmonton away. Like there's 10 to 12 teams in this league that literally think they can make one move and win the cup next year.
But then you think about it, right? We're sitting here with the Colorado Avalanche having won the Stanley Cup when everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people had predicted that they would do that. And the Tampa Bay Lightning being the team that got to the Stanley Cup final when a lot of people were talking about the Lightning as a three-peat. So all these teams think they're so close, right? Yet it was the teams that we kind of expected ended up as the last two teams playing. Maybe we didn't expect the New York Rangers to be among the last three. Maybe we didn't expect the Edmonton Oilers, right, to be among the last four. And that's where you're talking about teams that are close. What strikes me, though, Sean, and before we get to our interview with Mike, is we're sitting here in Montreal, and it was just a year ago that the Canadiens were in the Stanley Cup final. And you were here in a bubble, couldn't go anywhere. And now we're back here in person, packed house, everybody around, and they have the number one pick because they earned the number one pick. And it's kind of striking to see the difference in 1 year, what it makes. But you brought it up before. I definitely think the Canadiens want to make a huge splash here. And it might not just happen at the draft. I'm talking within the next, you know, week and a half to 2 weeks as we get up to July 13th for the, you know, when the market opens for the free agents. The Canadiens are not going to settle for being 29th or 30th, the 31st or 32nd again next season, not with a number one pick and, you know, a new GM who wants to make a splash, a president and Jeff Gorton who wants to make a splash. Cap space might be an issue. I get that, but they want to do a lot of things. And if they get to do it in their home here, it'd be incredible.
They have another issue. It's called goaltending.
That's where the cap space is going to be a problem.
Right. And that, what could preclude them from coming out of the basement. They can make all the moves they want. If Carey Price isn't ready to play hockey this year, they're in a bad way. So I think a lot's predicated on that, and I think it will, to a degree, determine their course, because you can't be aggressive if you can't back it up, if you don't have the defense to make all those moves. The Devils, perfect example, right? And, they were aggressive, and they couldn't defend. They didn't have a goaltender, and it was a waste. It was a waste of talent. So you can't do that in this market. You have to, you know, one of the big things, and Kenny Holland said this when he was talking about trades specifically, and big blockbuster trades, the Eichels, the trades that he's made in the past in Edmonton and Detroit, huge trades. You need to correctly identify your window. And you need to hit your window. And once you hit that window, you pounce. And you make the big trade you need to make. If you make it too early or you make it too late, you're wasting assets because it's not going to help you the way you think it is. So Montreal really needs to know where they're at. They need to figure out if their window is back open, if they have the pieces, if Cole Caulfield is the player he was at the end of last year under Marty St. Louis and not the player he was at the beginning of the year, if they have enough depth. And most importantly, if their goalie is going to be able to play 60 games and play them well.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be able to do that. And that's, you're right. It's a huge question for them. By the way, let's get to it, because the other part of the draft is not just all the player movement. It's the players getting drafted. And Obviously, Montreal has the number one pick. And so let's get to our interview with Mike Morial. He stopped by before. Busy man. Here is that interview with Mike Morial. Mike, thanks so much for joining us in person. And you are the busiest man in Montreal this week, I think. I can't find anybody busier than you are. So thank you very much. Top pick intrigue in this draft, Mike. Take us through it.
Yes, a lot of intrigue, Mr. Rosen, a lot of intrigue. At the top, now no one really knows what Montreal is thinking, what they're going to do, but as according to mock drafts, myself, my colleague Adam Kimmelman, we like Shane Wright at the top slot. We think that Shane Wright is the best two-way performer in this draft class. He's got the maturity. He's got that play that you want in a pick eventually. He's going to be a franchise player. He has the speed, his smarts, or he's got the IQ and smarts probably more so than any other player in this draft. I know there's been some question marks about Shane Wright's play this previous season. Maybe they anticipated more. They expected more points, expected him to maybe generate a few more points. But let's face it, I mean, Shane Wright missed an entire year in the OHL, Dan, last season. Had to go into his gym. He was working out, weights, doing everything he could to kind of prepare for this upcoming season. He scored 94 points in his return back to the season. And his only competitive hockey last year was the U18s, and he helped lead Canada to a first-place finish there. So I like what Shane Wright has been able to prove to a lot of players, a lot of scouts, I should say, a lot of general managers. I think people like the way he's performed this year. Obviously, Yuri Slavkovsky, a player who I have number two going to the New Jersey Devils in this draft. Big mobile player, was MVP at the Olympics, did so much for Slovakia, and Slovakia is going to have a heck of a draft this year. They could have as many as three players going in the first round, so we're all excited about it. But I like the fact that the Devils have a shot maybe here of getting a 6'3", 220-pound player to go alongside a Jack Hughes, a Nico Hischier. I think that would benefit them. And then number three in this list, and in the pecking order of forwards of this draft, at the top of the draft, Logan Cooley of the USA Hockey National Team Development Program, another player with extreme smarts, is good as far as sniping goals, and he was number two or three in the scoring for the NTTB this year. Real good player. I mean, intelligent in what he does on the ice, was probably, and everyone would agree, the best player on the National Team Development Program this year. And they could have as many as seven or eight players going in the first round. So it was a pretty deep, fast team this year.
Well, there's no way that the Canadians don't take Shane Wright, right? Like, that's the pick. That's the safe pick. That's the pick that will play well here in Montreal with them having the first overall pick. The other two are reaches. And it's much more difficult for a first-year GM to make that kind of reach, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can – I guess Montreal can – look at it as they can kind of promote Slavkovsky on the winning MVP at the Olympics. So this is why we like this player. He's big. He'll be a benefit in our lineup, you know, playing with maybe a Cole Caulfield, playing with a Suzuki. And then you look at Logan Cooley, another two-way center. Maybe they can make an impact. But I think it'll be a tough sell, despite the fact how good Logan Cooley is, to get that American, that U.S.-born player there. So I think Shane Wright, he's a Canadian-born kid. He's got the makeup of a player that he wants to play this coming season, too. Whether that happens or not, we'll have to see. I believe he can. Speaking to a lot of the scouts and a lot of the gentlemen over at NHL Central Scouting, who we've spoken to at length on NHL Draft Class, in fact, this season, they feel as though that this is a player that can come in, have an impact in training camp, and be a part of an NHL roster in October when the season starts. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Montreal should take a Shane Wright, and I would be not totally surprised if it doesn't happen, but I would be mildly surprised for sure.
Now, he's not, correct me if I'm wrong, he's not in the Matthews-McDavid mold. He's more in the, from what I've heard, the Bergeron type of mold. Like if you can get, and if he becomes Patrice Bergeron, my goodness, they'll love him here forever in Montreal. But that type of cerebral center. And I also heard that's kind of a knock on him as well. Like he sees the play, he's thinking the play, but at times not skating for the play. And is that, has that been a knock on him? Is that something that he's aware of as well?
He's very aware of it. It was a question that was raised during the NHL scouting combine, and he was asked about it in the media veil at the combine as well, Dan. And you know, he did say, he goes, I'm a methodical type player. I like to be almost like a chess player out there. And I also agree with you in the fact that, yeah, there isn't that generational player here in this draft class. You don't have the Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews. So Shane Wright is a franchise player. I believe that. And it's just a matter of him getting accustomed to where he is, the people he's playing with. And I'd also like to add, too, that just because he's a methodical player doesn't mean he doesn't have flash, dash. People like to see that, right? But in Shane Wright's case, I think from what I've seen in video and who I've spoken to during the course of the year, Shane Wright, when he plays the game, there were some missed opportunities from teammates around him. When he's playing with better players, I think it's going to benefit him. I think it's going to benefit his teammates and what he's able to produce and do for that franchise, whoever it might be.
Do you want to know why Shane Wright's going to go number one? Forget the analytics. Forget everything. He was at the Stanley Cup final. He had a pair of suit pants on with drawstrings.
Yep. With drawstrings. If that's, I wasn't not aware
a,
of that. Yeah.
If that's not a number one pick, I know everybody that's listening, they're jealous. I'm jealous. Drawstrings. That's a fashion statement.
It's big.
Of a number one pick. So that's why he's going number one. But here's my question to you, and I'm going to have your two worlds collide right now. Any chance the Devils trade for number one?
Yeah. I mean, there's always a chance that they move up to one to maybe get a Shane Wright, to maybe assure themselves that it might be Yuri Slavkovsky. I've heard rumors of that as well. I do believe the Devils will hold true to where they're at number two. I think from what I'm hearing, the offer may not be to what Tom Fitzgerald would like to consider or even think about, but we will see. I mean, it's always that chance that the Devils make that move. I think, in my opinion, I really do believe that Yuri Slavkovsky is the player that the Devils could use in their lineup, be it next season or the season after.
Yeah, I would be shocked if the Montreal Canadiens, hosting the draft, traded the number one pick. I'd be just floored if they did that. It would take a lot of guts. I don't think it would be wrong necessarily.
No.
I just think it would take a lot of guts. And I don't know that they would do that in their own building with the building packed and everybody anticipating them taking a player at number one. But you mentioned Slavkovsky with the Devils. And to me, I don't think it makes sense for the Devils to trade up to try to get one. They have Jack Hughes. They have Nico Hischier. Of course you'd want Shane Wright and have that 1-2-3 down the middle. But if you can get a player who, like you said, Mike, is 6'3", 220, and that type of power forward to play with a guy like Hughes or a Hischier, I mean, that's just falling into their laps. You know, I know that Tom Fitzgerald talked about the potential of trading that pick. That was before they got the number two pick. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, you know, the guy that they absolutely need is falling into their laps, and they can have him dirt cheap for 3 years.
Yeah. I remember talking to Tom Fitzgerald, after the passing of Clark Gillies, and we were reminiscing about Gillies, and he was telling me how much he admired him as a player, how he met him one time. And he said, every NHL team needs a Clark Gillies. When I spoke to Craig Ramsey, who is the men's national coach for Slovakia, I asked Craig Ramsey, this was unprovoked. Who does Yuri Slavkovsky remind you of? He said, Clark Gillies. He said, just looking at, look at what he did. He's playing with Trotz. He's playing with Boss. He was able to help them find the open space on the ice. All the things that you can imagine would happen for a Jack Hughes, for a Nico Hischier. And Dan, there's even a Dawson Mercer now that the Devils have.
That's true.
And he played wing most of last year, either besides Hughes or Hischier. But for me, he's an all-around center. And if he's at number three deep and then you get Mikey McLeod there at number four, the Devils might be set down the middle of the ice. They need bigger, stronger, faster players, and that's Yuri Slavkovsky.
So we've talked about the top three, and we've been lucky enough to be here in beautiful Montreal, which is beautiful, and the weather has been fantastic. It's so nice to be back here and not in a bubble.
Yes.
Like we were last year for the Stanley Cup Final. I can actually leave my hotel and wander the streets aimlessly.
I don't know if that's good or bad, Dan.
It's good.
Never good for him to wander the streets. Never good for you to wander the streets either, Mike.
No, it's not.
But we've had the opportunity to meet some of the other prospects that are going to go very high in this draft at the prospect showcase today. And I'm curious, out of those top eight guys, who's the dark horse there to be the first one to make it to the NHL? I'll tell you who I think it is after you tell me, because you know way more than I do.
Of the players that we've seen today and spoken to, you know, I really like Carter Gauthier for the National Team Development Program. Now, I'll throw a monkey in the wrench here, into here too, is the fact that Carter Gauthier is a player that a lot of scouts believe could slip into that 3-4 range. If a team does decide to trade up, it might be to get a Carter Gauthier. Everyone's been really quiet on this player, but he improved so much over the second half of the season. Obviously born in Sweden, you know, he's got some pedigree there with his dad playing. And, you know, as far as power play, PK, he can do it all. He's got the size, a big winger. He's going to play center at in college. So that's, you know, another feather in his cap. He played a lot of wing with the NTDP, but he's now going to play center. And it's, you know, I really believe Carter Gauthier is maybe a year, Sean, maybe a year away. Two, we'll see how he fits in college. Not necessarily right away, but I do think maybe, you know, in a year, 2 years, Carter Gauthier will be in the NHL.
Okay, so where did you have him in your latest mock draft?
Okay, so in my mock, I have Shane Wright. I've got Slavkovsky. I've got Logan Cooley. I've got two right-handed Ds then going next. Simon Nemec from Slovakia and David Juracek, the Czech Republic player. And then I have Carter Gauthier going right there at number six.
So why does everybody love those 2D? Especially Nemec, the Slovakian one.
Nemec. Look, the game today, right, Dan, is predicated on offense, moving the puck quickly. You saw the impact that Cale Makar had for the Colorado Avalanche, not only this year, but in previous seasons as well. You saw it coming. I'm not saying Simon Nemec is a Cale Makar, but I've heard some scouts that, you know, I respect greatly say that I think Simon Nemec could be the number one pick in this draft, depending on what a team is actually looking for. Roman Josi is a player that I've heard from a lot of scouts say that Nemec has that type of ability. He picked up his defensive play a lot over the second half of last year. He played in the Olympics. He played in the World Championships. Played limited ice time, not as much as Slavkovsky, because defensively they were kind of set in those areas. But I like what Nemec has been able to provide. And David Juracek, another one. Missed part of the season with an injury to the shoulder. Returned for the U18s. Had a great U18 tournament. Seems to be back in the mix again. Spoke to Dan Marr, the NHL director of Central Scouting. Says he's good to go. So he's going to be a player a little bit bigger than Nemec. I just think I have Nemec ahead of him just for the fact that he has a little bit more offensive upside. And that's the way the game seems to be trending right now. Make no mistake, you need to be defensively responsible. But I really feel that you also, in addition to that, know how to move the puck, quarterback a power play. Every so often, maybe be reliable on a PK if you put out there for that. But that's where I see Simon Nemec and his ability, you know, in maybe 2-3 years down the road.
So here's my guy. It's Connor Geeky. I've only seen him play a couple of times. He's got a head to play in the NHL. He's got the bloodlines. His brother plays in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Handled everything this weekend unbelievably, like just seems to have a head on his shoulders and wants to be that guy. Like, he's not shy about, I want to play in this league as an 18-year-old. And there's not many kids that want to do that anymore. Like, they all want to go, I want to go to college. I need another year. And, whatever. He's like, I'm ready. Whoever takes me is going to get a player that can play at 18. So that's my dark horse.
It's a good dark horse. And he's the youngest of three brothers. So he was beaten and, you know, beaten to a pulp in the basement during their games. And obviously Morgan, as you mentioned, you know, plays for Seattle, and his other brother Noah is a Division II baseball player. So yeah, he learned the ropes with his brothers. He enjoyed the time with them. He's bigger than his brothers, stronger. The one area that I think needs to develop and mature a little bit more in Connor's game is his skating. That's one thing that keeps being raised with a lot of scouts, a lot of GMs. How is his skating going to translate to the NHL? He's a thin guy. He's a big guy. He's just got to bulk out a little more into his body. I think that's where the skating, sometimes it looks like he's lumbering out there. But when I spoke to James Patrick, who coaches Winnipeg in the Western Hockey League, he told me that, yeah, sometimes it looks like he's struggling, but then all of a sudden he'll get into the zone, he'll get into the corner, he'll make a real nice play, and you say, this is the guy that you want on your NHL team at some point, whether it be 2-3 years down the road. So a couple more years in the dub, and I think that'll work wonders for Connor Geeky. And I agree with you, Sean. He's an exceptional player. I have him going in my top 15 of my mock draft. So
Too low, buddy.
We'll see where he goes tomorrow. You might be the right one.
I'm not smart enough to have a dark horse in the draft, so I won't give one. But I do want to bring, and Sean brought it, your major worlds collide before. I want to bring your other world into this, the Devils. You do cover them as well. And so Tom Fitzgerald's here, and to me, they're one of the most intriguing teams in this offseason of what they could do, because you know they're not settling to just be mediocre again. They want to push. They want to be a team that could contend for a playoff spot next season. Do you buy into the fact that number one priority for them after the draft is a goaltender?
Absolutely. And you know, we can debate this till like we're blue in the face, Dan, but it's goalie number one, and then maybe regaining some depth along the forwards, right?
Veteran depth.
Veteran depth yeah. in the forwards. And if you're able to get a Slafkovský and he looks good in training camp and he fits in well with Hughes and Hischier, then so be it. But absolutely goaltending. You know, goalies are being picked off the market little by little here. You know, there are some real good UFAs that are available. I'd like to see, you know, Fitzy maybe look into, and who knows, maybe he's doing that right now. We would expect him to be doing that and maybe making a move. But for the most part, I, you know, goaltending one, absolutely, you know, depth at wing. And a lot of people have been saying, well, maybe D. I think right now, Hamilton missed over 30 games last year. Ryan Graves was injured, two key components to that defense last year. Jonas Siegenthaler, to me, was one of the most consistent defensemen for the Devils last year. I think the Devils defensively, they're pretty good. Damon Severson really came into his own last year as well. So I like defensively with the Devils. They have obviously Luke Hughes is going to play another year at Michigan. It looks that way. So he'll be ready, you know, in a year. So defensively they're sound. It's goaltending. They went through seven of them last year, which was the most in franchise history. It just missed the NHL record. The Flyers at eight. So definitely goaltending seems to be the number one priority in New Jersey.
Where do you stand on Mackenzie Blackwood? Is he a one number one goalie?
I think it's still to be determined, Sean. Right? I want to see the guy remain healthy. I want to see him, you know, actually be in a playoff run. As you want to see all the Devils in a playoff run, because that's when you're going to see the character of these guys. What are they going to bring to the team when the chips might be down or a little adversity? I seen it, you know, last year when there was, you know, they suffered a big loss. If they suffered a big loss, they came back and played hard for Lindy Ruff the next game. So, okay, we see that. So now let's get into a playoff mix here. Let's see what happens, you know, the last month of the season, if they're in a playoff run for maybe 6, 7, 8, and then we could take it up a notch and see. I want to see Mackenzie Blackwood play in those games. And that's when we can kind of determine where he's at.
Did you go to law school?
I did not go to law school.
You're very evasive.
I'm evasive?
I asked you a question. You didn't answer it.
Well, I guess it at the end. Mackenzie Blackwood is the number one guy. I want to see him, you know. You need to see a little more.
He's not a number one. All right. We'll end this right.
A lawyer.
We'll end this right. He's going to be so evasive that he's going to evade the rest of this podcast. And he's very busy. Like we said, he's a very busy man, and he's enlightened us with his knowledge. But, Mike, thanks for jumping on with us. Now you got to do 100 other things, so go do them too, all right?
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great stuff there with Mike. And look, the NHL Draft Class podcast, an absolute must listen. Go binge it right now. Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman do a terrific job with that podcast. They do a terrific job covering the draft for NHL.com. Binge listen. Go read everything that they do. You will know everything you need to know before the draft begins Thursday night here in Montreal at Bell Center. Do that. Sean, back to player movement. There's a lot of stuff here.
There is, and but first of all, it is the best binge experience. It's better than Stranger Things. So go binge.
Go binge. Do it. All right.
Yeah, no, ton of player movement. I mean, there's been news everywhere, and it's going to come fast and furious. We're going to date ourselves here in a pretty rapid way. I thought the biggest thing, the GMs today, I believe it's Wednesday. I've already lost track of days, but
it
I
is
believe this is Wednesday afternoon. The GMs back at the hotel today had their meeting. They came out. A ton of them spoke, which is unusual. Ron Hextall said Chris Letang's close. We talked about it last week. What did I say?
I don't remember.
I said...
I'm just kidding.
Chris Letang was the more important of the
yes.
two pieces. Ron Hextall agrees with me because he said he's close to signing Letang. Could have it done before they leave Montreal on Friday night. Not as close with Malkin. Still trying. Wants to keep the three of them together, which has to be great news in Pittsburgh. They also signed Casey DeSmith, a much more minor deal. But has to be great news that the signing of Letang does not preclude the signing of Malkin. But there's a long row to hoe.
Absolutely. And I agree. Letang is the more, should be the priority. He's the guy, and we talked about this, he's the guy that's harder to replace. As good, as legendary as Evgeny Malkin is, Chris Letang is actually coming off his best season. If you look at the numbers, he's 35. He's coming off his best season. So, yeah, I think we've talked about this repeatedly. The window is 3 years. That's the Sidney Crosby window. I don't know what happens with Sidney Crosby after his contract is up. Chris Letang has to be a part of this for the Pittsburgh Penguins if they're going to stay competitive and keep pushing. Evgeny Malkin, to me, is a little bit of a luxury at this point. He isn't the same player he was. And I know, and I asked this question to Ron Hextall today, is it your intention still to re-sign both? Of course he's going to say yes, because he's not going to just shoot down the idea of signing Malkin at this point. And I believe him when he says it's the intention, but they want to sign Malkin on their terms. They don't want to sign Malkin on Malkin's terms, and that's why I don't think Evgeny Malkin signs with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think he's playing elsewhere, start of next season.
Yeah, it could well be, and there's another guy who we wonder about, and that's Peter Forsberg, and I know you...
Forsberg. I don't wonder about Peter.
I wonder about Peter, because I just watched Unrivaled.
Oh, there you go. That's where it came from. Yeah. Look, if they could sign Peter Forsberg in his prime, I think everybody would be going after that, too.
Yeah, no, I got my Unrivaled references mixed up. Peter Forsberg, he looked good in the video. If anybody hasn't seen it yet on ESPN Plus, fantastic 2 hours of storytelling.
I actually haven't watched that yet. I need to go.
Oh my God, is it amazing? Yeah. Great story. We lived through that.
Yeah.
You know, that was the prime of, that was the beginning of my hockey career covering, and it was unbelievable. And the access they got the medical guy talking about being on the ice with Chris Draper when he got hit, listing the injuries. Chris Draper saying they wanted to put him on a backboard, and he's like, F you will. Like, I'm getting up and I'm skating off. Like,
love it.
Claude's not getting the better of me. It was unbelievable. Kenny Holland actually spoke about it today and said he hadn't seen it yet, but all of that emotion was real. And I thought they did a really good job of catching it. But anyways, back to Philip Forsberg. I know that you talked to David Poile today, and we all wonder what's going to happen. There's an 8-year contract out there for him. The Predators are the only ones that can do it, but I don't know if it's going to be enough.
By the way, I liked how you went down that Unrivaled rabbit hole a little bit, but climbed right back out of it. That was very well done.
Well,
you
know,
it was a good rabbit hole to go down.
I hate to look stupid, yeah. And I did by saying Peter Forsberg. So
no worries about it. Philip Forsberg, though. Look, You're right. Nashville is the only team that can give him an 8-year contract. And if he gets to July 13th, becomes an unrestricted free agent, max, he can get a 7 years. David Poile was honest today. He said it's money, obviously, because they can offer them the term that nobody else can. It comes down to money, the finances of the deal. Obviously, the average annual value of the contract is a sticking point somewhere, wherever that is going to be. We're not 100% sure. David Poile said a no-trade clause and a no-movement clause will be part of the contract. That's what Forsberg wants. It's negotiated in. It is the Nashville Predators' number one priority to sign him. They want this done. They believe that Philip Forsberg and his people want it done as well. Everybody's been saying the right things. But as Poile said today, we're approaching a deadline. July 13th is that deadline. Really, July 12th is that deadline. And if it's not done then obviously Forsberg's going to go test the market and see what he's worth out there. And there's plan B out there, though, for the Predators. And David Poile said, no matter what happens, we're not going to get shut out. Because all the money that they can give to Philip Forsberg, that means that they can give it to somebody else. And I've thought about this, and I think we brought it up last week. If it's not Forsberg, could it be Johnny Gaudreau? Right? I mean, why not? Right? Johnny Gaudreau, if he becomes an unrestricted free agent on July 13th, Calgary wants him back. They're going to move heaven and earth to get him, all that stuff. Still not signed, right? If he becomes that and Forsberg leaves, I could see Johnny Gaudreau slide right into that Forsberg spot with the Predators, and they'd be set. So he said they're not going to get shut out. Number one priority to sign Forsberg. I'm leaning towards they get it done. I think they get it done.
Again, and we talked about this. I don't know how player and team don't yeah. get it done. To me, it's a perfect match. Player to the city, player way of life in Nashville. Like who leaves Nashville willingly? You know, they're competitive. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to play hockey. So, you know, hopefully they get it done, but it certainly is going to be one of the storylines. And you know, you look at good players and you're like, oh, they're going to stay forever. And we've already seen one of them didn't, right? And Kevin Fiala
yep.
gets moved by Minnesota because they don't have money. And they have money tied up in dead contracts and everything else. And Billy Guerin knew this day was coming and was up front. Like, he just had to get the best deal he could, and he did. He got a great deal. So, you know, again, when you talk about it, I think we're going to see that more and more. We're going to see GMs just wash their hands and say, you know what, we're stuck. And to get unstuck, I got to make a really ugly decision, one that the fans aren't going to like, one that I don't like. If you think Billy Guerin liked trading Kevin Fiala, you don't know Billy Guerin. He would have loved to have kept that player. He just couldn't.
It's the cap world. That's the flat cap world, especially. I mean, Julian Brisebois talked about this, how hard it was to talk to Ryan McDonagh and move Ryan McDonagh. Ryan McDonagh has meant so much to that team and their back-to-back championships and getting to the Stanley Cup final 3 years in a row, the Lightning. I mean, a warrior-type player for them, and just didn't fit. Just can't make it work. Can't make it fit. Moves him to Nashville. Ironically, talked to David Poile about this today. He's hopeful that the fact that the Predators got Ryan McDonagh is a sign to Philip Forsberg that they are very much in it to win it. And that should be another thing that, you know, entices him to re-sign with Nashville. If you needed any more reasons to re-sign with Nashville, I need none. I could take a lot less than Philip Forsberg, Sean, and you could send me to Nashville. But, you know, that's an enticing thing. You get a top, like a bona fide champion defenseman, right, to add to an already pretty good blue line who has Roman Josi on it, you know. And David Poile said number of players on the Predators were calling him and reaching out to him and saying how excited they were and happy they were that they were able to go get Ryan McDonagh. David, you know, Philip Forsberg was not one of those players because it's a little bit of a different situation. But Tampa Bay didn't want to do it. They had to do it. They felt they had to do it. They made a decision, and they didn't want to do it, but they did it. Nashville benefits, and maybe Nashville benefits even more from the Forsberg situation if he is enticed by them getting a player like that.
I heard that Peter Forsberg did call David Poile.
And Peter Forsberg did.
Tell him he's very excited about the acquisition. But I've only heard that. So, but I think that to me, and they're not the same player, but Ryan McDonagh fills the Ryan Ellis hole.
Different player, but yes. Yeah.
Like that blood and guts. Mm-hmm. Like Ryan Ellis is a far more accomplished offensive player, but he was also the guy that put his body in harm's way all the time and is paying for it now in Philadelphia. He's still trying to get healthy. That's what Ryan McDonagh does, and that's what he'll do for them. He will make those sacrifices that you need to make to win series, right? And Nashville wasn't close to winning a series this year. They ran into a buzzsaw in Colorado, and there was nothing they could have brought Peter Forsberg and Ryan Ellis and whoever else we could think into the lineup, and it wasn't going to matter. So, but going forward, I think he'll make a difference when they get back into the playoffs, when they're in close games. There, you can't replace the experience that Ryan McDonagh has and the way that he's just able to calm down a room full of nervous people.
You know what I thought when, by the way, I hope Peter Forsberg listens to this podcast. Do you know what I thought when they traded Ryan McDonagh? And I don't, I'm probably wrong because why would I doubt Julien Brisebois and John Cooper and the Lightning at this point? But trading him made, the first thought I had was beginning of the end, right? For the Lightning and what they hope is a dynasty, right? Or it maybe already is a dynasty. I don't know. Was just, you're trading that guy and you don't win the cup once, let alone twice, without that guy. And I thought beginning of the end. And I, you know, that, and that's why it's so hard to continue to have in the NHL right now. It's so hard to put together dynasties because you have to make that decision eventually, right? But that, I don't know what your thought was when they traded McDonagh, but that was my first thought.
Not my thought. He's a luxury at this point for them, right? He's so important, but he's literally a luxury. They have the best goaltender in the world. They have three of the best offensive players that are currently playing in the NHL. They have depth. They have the best coach in the NHL. Like, to me, Ryan McDonagh, as valuable as he is neither make nor break for them. There are eight players that are probably more important. So when you start looking at your salary cap and you start looking at what you're spending, and I think Nick Paul put himself in that place where he was more important than Ryan McDonagh just by the way that he played, and to be able to lock him up for such a long term at a relatively cheap rate if you're prorating what he's going to be allows them to continue to build, right? They just keep adding these pieces. Like, you just look at their team every year and you're like, where'd that guy come from? How's he so good, right? They find the piece that works perfect, and that's what they did. And look, if they're close again, you don't think they can find another Ryan McDonagh? I think they can. And I think they will. Julien Brisebois, to doubt Julien Brisebois is a fool's game right now until he messes up.
Right. And that's why I said I'm probably wrong to doubt him, you know, but that was my first thought. Let's talk history, though, Sean. There was history made this week, and he's here representing his team, Mike Greer. San Jose Sharks finally hired a general manager. They still need a coach, but Mike Greer, the first black general manager in the history of the National Hockey League, was working with the New York Rangers past year. In hockey ops with Chris Drury, and he gets his opportunity and a lot of work to do. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here with San Jose, especially at the draft now, but just in specific to Mike Greer, a lot of work to do.
An unbelievable amount of work with no time to do it.
None.
So he was named the GM yesterday. He held a press conference on Tuesday, flew to Montreal, sat in on a GM's meeting today. First one he's ever been in. He never did it when he was in New York or any place else. Literally the first time he sat with the 31 most powerful men in hockey. Fresh meat.
Yeah.
Like, free agency's opening in 2 weeks. Hey, you want to trade me this guy? I'll give you these three guys. Like, Mike Greer's a smart guy. He's watched some hockey in his day. He's played some hockey in his day, played it well. He doesn't have a book on these guys. He doesn't know, and he doesn't know the guys that are telling him, right? Whoever's in San Jose and is saying, oh, yeah, that's a really good offer Chicago made. That guy's good. That guy's good. Like, he has no basis to trust those people. They were there when he played and whatever else, but you need to have your guys and you need to trust. And now he has 2 days to make a draft board. He has a week and a half to do free agency. Like, he's in a really hard place. If anybody can do it, I think it's Mike, and I think it's great, you know, as the diversity continues to grow, but I found the timing a little unusual.
Well, the timing's very unusual. The timing of them firing Bob Bugner and they still don't have a coach. That's unusual, but this isn't about a one-year thing for the San Jose Sharks, right? They want, of course, they want, they're 3 years removed from a playoff berth. They want to get back there. They have veteran guys. They just signed Hurdle. Couture is signed. I don't know where they go with Erik Karlsson. I don't know where they go with Brent Burns. So they're veterans there. I don't think the cupboard is full in San Jose. It's not bare, but it's not full. It's they can talk all they want about wanting to get back and have this quick turnaround, not rebuild and all that. To me, this is you're putting your general manager behind the eight ball already, and he's got a lot of catch-up work to do here. This can't be about this season for the San Jose. It just can't be.
No, and I don't think it is. I don't think you make this hire and say this is make or break. He's going to do this or he's not. Like, you have to grow with the GM. You've identified your guy who shares your philosophy, who shares, you know, what you want to do. And they're not an organization that changes a ton. They've had the same people, yeah. Right? Like, so I think there's an opportunity there for Mike to grow with the organization and to be able to put his fingerprints on it. And I think it's going to be very collaborative. Like, who knows, like, who stays around? You know, I think whoever the finalists were, most likely nobody really thought that Bob Bugner was the answer. And that's why even before Mike Greer was announced, his departure was announced. Like, I think you need to give the GM a clean slate. You can't make a GM go down without his captain. Right. If his captain's going to steer you into a glacier or an iceberg, it's his captain.
Right.
It's not somebody else's captain.
But, and I didn't mind that at all. What they did with I mean, I like Bob Bugner, and I think he's a coach in the National Hockey League, head coach or assistant, whatever it is. But I didn't mind that because now, like, Mike Greer's not standing here next to Bob Bugner at this draft, knowing in a week he's going to fire him. Right. I mean, he's standing here without a coach, but his first move didn't have to be to fire the guy who was the coach. They took care of that for him. So I didn't mind that at all. And clean slate for him. There's been some rumblings that it could, you know, David Quinn could be in the mix. There's a BU connection there with Mike Greer and David Quinn. We'll see where that goes. But even he didn't prioritize that. He prioritized the draft, prioritized free agency, and then he prioritized the coach. And to me, I think, you know, if you're going to be active in free agency, if I'm a player, I want to know who the coach is going to be. I think they have to name a coach before they get to July 13th. I think that's a must, and we'll see if they do. And they do have time to do that. But Mike Greer has been around the National Hockey League long enough to know a lot of people. So it's not like he's completely raw to this. But I think that they have to name a coach before they get there because – You want guys want to know who they're going to play for.
Dan, you could coach me if they gave me enough money.
Well,
you could be the coach.
You're just a mercenary, though. That's the problem.
But I'm saying you're like, they want to know who they play for. They want to know how much they're going to get paid. And if they're going to get paid more by San Jose than they are by Philadelphia, who has John Tortorella as their coach, or another team who has this guy as their coach, they're going to be like, seriously? Who cares who coaches? Captain Kangaroo can coach.
I think they care. And by the way, and this is tragic, Mike Greer's real first day on the job, second day on the job, comes to Montreal, and Brian Marchment, former NHL player, was a scout with the San Jose Sharks, 53 years old, passes away here in Montreal. So we're all excited for the draft. We're hopped up, enthusiastic about being in person and all these players can get picked and player movement, as we've discussed, you know, throughout this whole podcast. But it is on a backdrop of some tragic news, Sean.
Yeah, and it's real life, and it's a horrible thing. And, you know, Mike spoke about it today. He played with Brian and talked about how Brian always had time for everybody, you know, as a player, as a front office guy. Talked about how he would get invited over to Brian's house for a home-cooked meal when he was, you know, when Brian sensed that Mike had his fill of eating out. I don't know when anybody gets their fill of eating out, but I guess people do. And, you know, would be invited in for a home-cooked meal, right? And Brian played the game hard. played the game fair for the most part. You know, he was a player that was feared when he played, and it was a different game that he played than we play now. But, you know, a really good man by all accounts, a really important part of the Sharks family, and it is a horrible backdrop to start a career and to start what is a very celebratory weekend. And you know, our prayers go out to the Marchment family. I mean, look, it hits home.
Yeah.
I'm 53. It's scary stuff. So, you know, like I said, you know, our prayers go out to the Marchment family in what's a very difficult time, the Sharks community, the Sharks family. It's just tragic.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't mean this to sound naive or, you know, uncool or, you know, wrong, but the show must go on, right? The show is going on here in Montreal, and our show, though, I think, Sean, must end. So we, you know, there's a lot here. There's going to be so much that happens here in Montreal. So, the draft, Mike broke down what could happen. Player movement's going to be very unpredictable, to say the least.
So I got to tell you before we go.
Yeah.
We're in Montreal. We had a little dinner at Gibby's. Never been before.
Again, I wasn't there.
Yeah, never been before. Everybody in the NHL was there. Literally.
Not me.
Every prospect, every front office guy. Mike Zeisberger was holding court at Gibby's for 2 hours. But before that, we went out and we had a couple of drinks. A friend of mine was in from Belfast, worked for the Belfast Giants, now works for Ulster Rugby. Mark Brooks might be the biggest fan of the podcast.
Nice.
He paid for our beers, so I'm giving him a little shout out right now.
I was not there again, but I'm very happy that he's a big fan of the podcast.
We'll make up for it over the next couple of days, buddy.
All right. Look, lots of stuff to do here. It's an exciting weekend in Montreal. And we're at the Bell Center. The action starts Thursday night. We thank Mike for hopping on. NHL Draft Class Podcast. Go binge it after listening to this one. Enjoy the draft.